So the Mahabharata war was about to start. The war was between two cousins, two branches of the same family. And Arjuna, who was the best warrior of the Pandavas. The Pandavas are considered as the good, and the Kauravas were considered as the evil, which they were. The Kauravas were persistently evil, dishonest, corrupt, and the Pandavas tried to live a very honest and sincere life, but they were persistently cheated and mistreated by the cousins, and even their kingdom was stolen and all that. Their wife was, and so the war, even though they tried to prevent it, became inevitable because the Kauravas were not willing to compromise. Having stolen their kingdom, they were not even ready to give them even an inch of land. And so the scene of the battle is that the two armies are stationed, as you can see, and Arjuna, our hero of this Mahabharata, of this particular Gita, is his charioteer Krishna, the Lord himself, stations the chariot between the two armies, and Arjuna, seeing the two sides, and he says, oh, on the both sides there are my uncles, my grandfather, my teachers, and this war is going to cause tremendous killing. And which is true. And he said, so there was two things. One is that there will be tremendous destruction. And secondly, I will be the cause. So there will be killing and I will be responsible, because he was the main warrior of on the side of the good. And so Krishna wants to tell him that even though war is evil, but in certain situations it is unavoidable. And this is one of those situations where we have tried everything to make peace, but it is at this moment your duty, because the country is ruled by people who are evil, who are corrupt. And unless you do your duty, you will be failing. But Arjuna does not seem to understand. So Krishna decides to teach him. And that's where the second chapter, the 11th verse, starts with the teachings. Interestingly, normally a teacher will teach at the basic level and then move upwards, but Krishna does the opposite. He just bombards him with the highest knowledge of the Upanishads. And he says, let me wake him up. It's like somebody sleeping and he won't wake up. So what do? You throw a glass of cold water on him. He gets angry and he wakes up. So similarly, Arjuna is in this sleep of delusion, and these verses are like a glass of cold water that mean to wake him up. So Krishna starts with the highest knowledge of the Upanishads and then slowly will come down to our level where we are. These verses may not be very practical for us at this time, because we are all at the level of Arjuna. We are at the level of how do I deal with my husband, my wife, my boss, my children, my teenagers, how do I deal with worldly problems, financial problems, social problems. So the Gita addresses all those things. It addresses at the highest level and then also comes down to our level. So even though these verses may not make much sense to us as we listen to them today, we say, I don't think this is practical. But all we have to do is just listen. Because the second chapter is a preview, just as in a book, you have a table of contents. First chapter is this, second chapter is this, third chapter, fourth chapter, and a little bit, maybe two lines. So similarly, the second chapter gives us an introduction to the entire Bhagavad Gita. What is the highest knowledge? What is your duty? What is your dharma? What is your duty towards your family, towards society? And then how should you deal with situations? And what should be your attitude with which you work in the world, and about sattva and rajas and tamas. So everything will be covered in the 18 chapters. But in the second chapter, the Lord just gives us little, PowerPoints, or little pulse, little bits of knowledge, which we can then wait for these. So whatever is taught in the second chapter, even though these few verses may seem very difficult, will be repeated. The Lord will repeat it again in the 5th chapter, in the 9th chapter, in the 13th chapter. So as we study the Bhagavad Gita, these points will become more clear. So the Lord tells him that first of all, Yes, the bodies will be destroyed. Anta vanta ime dehaha nityas yokta sharirinaha anashino aprameyasya tasmad yudhyasva bharata. No doubt the bodies will be destroyed, but you and I and these kings, we are not the body. We are that supreme self, the atma, the consciousness that is there in all of us. And that can never be destroyed. Anashino aprameyasya. That atma, the consciousness, the Lord within, which we call as Om, can never be destroyed. Yeah, the body will be destroyed. And in this chart, with the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. With the intellect, I think the thoughts. That's for the new people. And V is vasanas, or my desires. And Om represents God's presence or consciousness. So the God's presence is our true nature. That's what the Upanishad tells us, that you have two. You have the higher nature and the lower nature. The lower nature is this body, mind and intellect, which has the name Anil or Shana or Satish. But Om, the consciousness, is one. Even though our names may be different, maybe male or female, young or old, short or tall, black or white. But the Lord, the consciousness, is one. So he tells us, Bhagavan tells us, that you are not this body. You are that supreme consciousness occupying this body, and then you have a male or a female or this particular name or form. So pay attention to who you are. And he says, Ya enam veti hantaram yaschainam manyate hatam ubhav tauna vijanitaha nayam hanti nahanyate. So Krishna says that the Lord, the consciousness within us, it is neither destroyed nor it kills. So if you think that the consciousness is killing, it is you're ignorant. Or the consciousness gets killed. The atma, the consciousness, never gets killed. The body does. Ubhav tauna vijanitaha. Both of them do not know. So that's what we have come to so far. But it seems little difficult to swallow. And Bhagavan knows that. So the next few verses, he will continue on this same topic, to explain the nature of this Atma, this consciousness, the Lord within, what is its true nature, and then he will come down to our level. So all we have to do is be a little patient and just pay it. Even if you don't understand it, accept it. Bhagavan has said it, the Lord has said it, I believe it. I may not understand it, I may not accept it, but at least I have faith that if it is in the scriptures, it must be correct. Like if it is in the Bible and Jesus has said it, I may understand, I may not understand, I may not accept, but at this moment I do not understand, but if Jesus has said it, it must be true. So that kind of faith we have to have. So we'll continue this same topic from verse number 20. So verse number 20. Now here Bhagavan is using a different meter, because this verse is very important. When they change the meter, that means this verse you need to pay more attention to. So verse number 20. Na jayate mriyate va kadachit. Nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyah. Ajo nitya shashvato yam puranah. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. So yam, he's talking about yam. This, what this? This atma, this consciousness, the Om, the Lord within, which we have talked about in the previous verse, that it one who it neither gets killed nor kills. So let us see what are the characteristics of this Atma. So Bhagavan is explaining it further. Na jayate, it is not born. Na mriyate va kadachit. Na jayate, na mriyate. A few weeks back, I had talked about a concept called Deepadeli Nyaya. Does anybody remember that? There's a concept in Sanskrit called Deepadeli Nyaya. Can you know that? How about the lamp? that is kept. Does anybody remember that on the corner between two rooms, on the threshold between two rooms, we keep a lamp. Now, anybody remembers? No. Okay. So, as we had said, suppose that you only have one lamp. You know, the power is gone, and you only have one little lamp. You know, with the wick. And you need to illumine two rooms because there are, you know, people in one room. Maybe somebody's eating in one room. Somebody's, you know, getting ready for bed. And we only have one lamp. So what you do, you put it in the courtyard, in the pad, whatever you call, the dahlij. You know, that part between the two rooms. You know, there's a door and the door has a little wooden thing, especially in India. So you put it on there so it can illumine two rooms. And that's how. So in Sanskrit, when one word illumines two different concepts, it is called Deep Dehli Nyaya. So na jayate kadachit, na mriyate kadachit. So it is never, kadachit means never. Never it is born and never it dies. So the word never is used for both. Atma is never born, Atma never dies. So but instead of using it twice, in Sanskrit they just use it once, kadachit, and they expect you to understand. So that's called Deep Dehli Nyaya. So please remember that next time if I ask in a few months. So it says that the Atma is never born and never dies. Nayam. Now what happens to this Atma? Nayam bhutva bhavita vana bhuyaha. Bhutva means having appeared, being here. Bhavita vana bhuya. It never becomes non-existent. So the Atma, if you see, Atma is in every one of us. She has Atma, he has, I have, you have. Everybody has this Atma. And the fact that it is here means it will always be here. There is never a time when it will become non-existent. So it is never born, it never perishes, it never, having appeared, it never becomes, never disappears, never becomes non-existent. Existent. Why? Why do you say that? So then Bhagavan gives us the characteristics of this Atma. It says Aja. Aja means unborn. So this Atma, the God, the consciousness, this Atma is nothing but there is one Atma which is the same as Paramatma. The one Atma is the same as the Supreme Lord appearing in all of us and appearing to be separate. But actually there is one consciousness in every one of us. That is the Supreme Lord. And that is unborn. Obviously, you know, even the Bible said God alone was, and then the world was created. And then when the world will end, at the time of deluge, God will still remain. They don't say there was a time when God was not there, then suddenly he appeared. And then after deluge, God will die. No scripture say that. Neither the Upanishads nor the Bible. So it is unborn. It is nitya. It is eternal. Means always was there, is there, and always will be there. Shashwat. Shashwat, the word, it means there is no modification. There are no changes. It is not that just as you and I are getting older, and you know, first we were young, and then we became middle-aged, and then we're going to old age, and then ultimately, you know, we will go to our end. So Sunday morning, why are you talking about death? But that is a fact. And that's what this whole scripture is, because that's what at least the second chapter talks about, death. So he says it is eternal, means there is no changes. It never changes. And Purana, and it is ancient. Ancient means even before this universe came into being, it was there. And this is not the first universe. That's what the Upanishads tell us. That the world has been created and destroyed many times. We don't know how many times. This is what creation number 5 or 10 or 15, 20, we don't know. But the Supreme Lord has done this many times. So you might say, oh, this lasts for so many billion years. Yes, that many billion years is one creation. And then when the creation ends, then after a few billion years, again, there will be a big bang and again a new creation. So this is not the first rodeo, you know, it is not the first time that the Big Bang has happened. It keeps happening. The creation comes, destroyed. So we are only a very tiny part of the tiny particle of this whole universe. So Ajo Nitya Shashvataha Ayam Puranaha Nahanyate Hanyamane Sharire. Hanyamane Sharire, when the body is destroyed, that consciousness, the Atma, na hanyate, is not destroyed. So this verse is very technical. I'll be using some technical words. So I'll try my best to explain it. I hope I can do it. So let us see some concepts. So we said the body has six changes. What are the changes? In Sanskrit, they're called Shat Vikaraha. Six modifications, six changes. And what are the six modifications? I'll tell them in Sanskrit. And then Asti, Jayate, Vardate, Viparinamate, Apakshiyate, Vinashyate. So the body is born. Jayate, Asti, it is. So the body is first born and then you say it exists. So that when the child emerges from the mother's womb, that is the day of birth, and then you say, okay, the child is. Before that, he was not. I mean, he was, but he was in the mother's womb, but now you see him, so the child is. Then Vardate, then the child grows. You know, from a little child, he becomes, a, you know, goes to junior high, then he becomes a monster when he becomes a teenager. And then slowly, then he grows up. And when he has children, then he says, oh my God, my parents were right. I used to think they don't know anything. Now I realize how much they knew. And whatever they were telling me, now my children are making me suffer. So from childhood, they become a teenager, then Vardate, and then becomes a young man. Okay, young man he becomes. And then what happens? Viparinamate. Then changes slowly start coming. You know, as the mother, the lady has children, you know, then she, you know, becomes pregnant and then her body changes. And then as the man, you know, goes through his age, slowly the changes start coming. The body becomes a little weaker. Maybe he gains weight, his tummy comes out a little bit. And then viparinamate. And then slowly these changes go to apakshiyate. It starts deteriorating. So as we become older, you know, my body is weaker. I'm not able to do all the things I could do when I was young. You know, I could run a marathon. Now I cannot even run 100 yards and I get out of breath. I can barely walk to the mailbox to get my mail. So that is called deterioration. And then ultimately, vinashyate. It perishes. And that is the story of every human being. Even though we don't like to hear it, but it is the fact that whatever is created has to perish. Our parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents, all of them came, left, and you know when our turn will come. But this Atma, the consciousness, does not go through these six changes. It is the witness. It supports all of them because all changes happen in the presence of Atma. It illumines everything. The example they give is like the light in the movie. You know, I don't know nowadays what they have, but in the olden days they used to have those reels. The movie used to be wrapped up and it used to run, you know, with a motor in this projector, and there was a very powerful light. It shines through the film and projects it on the screen. Now, on the screen, various events are happening. You know, there's a little boy, then he grows up, then he meets a girl, then he falls in love, and then the girl's father says, I don't want you to marry my child, and then the villain comes, and villain kidnaps the heroine, and then he runs and rescues her, and then they have a big fight at the end. Finally, the villain is taken to the jail, and the man and woman, boy and girl, live happily ever after. They don't say what happened after marriage. They just end with they got married. What happens afterwards? Sorry, don't ask us. So in this movie, when the child was growing and becoming a young man and he met this girl and then he went through all the problems. So when the good things were happening, the light is still illuminating. When the bad things happen, the villain comes and then he kidnaps her and then he gets a gang and beats up the hero, and then, you know, the hero is suffering, the heroine is crying. The light is the same. The light is illumining everything. When they were happily, in love and singing songs behind the trees, the light was still illumining. And then when she's in one corner crying, you know, Mera Sajan Bichad Gaya, no? Then the light is still illumining. The light is constant, but the events keep on changing, and ultimately, the end of the movie comes. And when the movie comes, does anything happen to the light? No. The movie came and went, but the light remains unchanged. So similarly, you and I are going through this life where all these events are happening in us. Whatever they show in the movie happens to all of us. But the light, the consciousness, na jayate, na mriyate, does not go through these six changes. And it says that nayam bhutva bhavita navana bhuya, and it is aja, it is unborn, and it is eternal, and there are no modifications. So he said, how do you say it is unborn? I don't believe it. You know, last week also somebody was asking, there had to be a day when God was born, right? Before God was not there, and then one fine day there had to be, maybe billions of years ago, but what, how do you say God was unborn? It's never born, was always there. So he said, well, there are two ways to believe it. One is Shruti and one is Yukti. So in Shruti means the scriptures. Scriptures are said to be the pramana, the means of knowledge. Like now this, if I tell you what is the color of this tablecloth, you'll say blue, right? Why? Because your eyes can tell you it is blue, and when you were a child, your parents told you this is blue, this is green, this is yellow, this is red, this is black, your parents or your teacher. So what is the means of knowing the color of this tablecloth? Eyes, right? And the eyes then send the information to the mind, which recognizes the color as blue. So the pramana for knowing the color is eyes. So what is the pramana for knowing life? It is the scriptures. And all the scriptures give us the same knowledge, whether it's Bible or Quran or Bhagavad Gita or Guru Granth Sahib or whatever the scripture may be. But that is the pramana. So if it is there in the scriptures, that is enough proof. So that is, first of all, we have to believe it. They say, no, 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 no. Scriptures, okay, somebody wrote it. You know, Gita was written so many thousand years ago. Upanishad was written 8,000 years ago. What did, you know, they don't know all this modern. They didn't have telescopes and computers. I need proof. I need proof. I want yukti. Shruti, it's okay. Maybe God said it, but you know, maybe he told it for Arjun. It doesn't apply to me. So I want proof. Said, so, okay, you want proof? You want yukti, the logic? So we'll try. We'll try to, you know, some people don't want to believe what they have heard. They want logic. So logic, there are two Sanskrit phrases, prak abhava and pradvamsa abhava. So I'll try to explain that. Prak abhava means prior non-existence, and pradvamsa abhava means posterior non-existence. I know these are technical words, but I'll try to simplify it. So you say God was not there, right? Okay, we believe you. Okay, you said God was not. So there was, he was non-existent, right? God was non-existent. And then at one particular time in the past, maybe billions of years ago, he became existent. He was born. And then there will be a time many, many, many billion years later where he is there, and then he will be dead. He will be gone. So that is called prior non-existence and posterior non-existence. He was not existing, then he became existing. And then here he was existing, and then he became non-existent. He died. Okay, that's what you're saying. Yeah, okay, we listen to you. So if God was non-existent, and then he became existent, who created him? We talked about that last time also. Who created God, right? If God was non-existent, somebody had to create him, right? So he said, no, no, no. Yeah, there was another God who created this God. Okay, that God. Who created that God who created this God? Oh, there was a super God. And then who created that super? You go on and on and on. How many times? Super God, super, super God. Ultimately, you have to come to one end where there was this God who is Swayambhu, who is self-created, who is the always existing. Because ultimately, if you say somebody was created, then there had to be a creator, and then the creator had to have a subsequent creator. So ultimately, you come to one that is uncreated, from whom the whole universe came. So we say, no, 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 God is Swayambhu. He is self-created. There is no creator. There is no God. God alone created himself. But he was not there, and then he created himself and became. We're not saying there's second God, third God. There is only one God. He is self-created. Okay, you say God is self-created. All right. Now tell me, God is existing or not now? Yeah, he is existing. So before he was created himself, what was he? Non-existing, right? So from non-existence, how can he make existence? If something doesn't exist, how can it do anything? Like you say that this person does not exist anymore. Say this person has passed away, Einstein is not existing anymore. Can he do any math calculations? No. So something that is non-existing, from that existence cannot come. Existence can become non-existent, but from non-existence, existence cannot come. So from nothingness, suddenly God cannot appear, cannot create himself. If he is nothing, how can he make something out of nothing? So what you have to understand, that there was something called God or consciousness or Brahman or Father in heaven or whatever you want to call it, that was always there. Because if you say it's non-existent, then how can it create anything, right? Am I making sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was always existing, and there was never a time when it was not existing. Or then you say, second question is, that suppose God was not there and then he became. So there had to be somebody to witness, right? Okay, somebody said God was not there. I saw him. Now he suddenly appeared. So who is that that was witnessing? Similarly, at the end of creation, God was one day there and suddenly he died. He became. So somebody had to witness it. Somebody had to know that, right? To report that, you know, God was there. There was this powerful entity and one day he disappeared. There is then whoever is to witness becomes more powerful than God. So what we are saying, God alone is, and there is a never a time when he is not there and he'll always be there, and there is never a time when he will not be there. Because suppose you say God suddenly died one day, then what will happen to this whole universe? There is nothing to support it, right? Because the Lord within us is keeping you and me alive. Suppose God alone himself dies, and what's going to happen? The whole universe will end. But they say the universe continues. It is ongoing. So there is no time when God was not there. And in you and me also, I remember my childhood, right? I remember at age 5 what things I used to do. Then I became a teenager, and then I did all those stupid things. And then I became a young man, and then I, you know, went to college, and then I met somebody, and then I got married, and then I had children. So I remember my past. I remember from childhood to the youth, to the middle age and old age. And even so, who is that that remembers? The body is changing. The mind, my emotions are constantly changing, you know, every 5 minutes. One day I'm happy, then I'm unhappy, disturbed. My knowledge is changing. Like we used to believe before, the earth is flat. Now we know the earth is round. And we keep finding new and new facts about the universe, about plants, about animals. And my desires, my vasanas are changing. Everything is constantly changing. So even the ego, this I, you know, which was there in childhood, is different from the I which is now. So the one that knows from childhood to youth to now is the consciousness. So that consciousness I am. Because if I was not, then I would not remember. How do I remember? Because there has to be one constant factor. Like now her life, I cannot remember. How was her childhood? Where did she go this weekend? Or where is she going the next week? I cannot know it. She can know it unless she tells me. So similarly, my life only I can know how I was as a 5-year-old and then as a 10-year-old and a 15 and a 20. Nobody else. Yeah, you like your parents may know some aspects, you know, whatever you choose to tell them. You know, half the time we don't tell, at least I never did. I was a very mischievous child, and then half the things my parents didn't know. And I'm sure all of us will say the same thing. So the parents may know part of it. Your spouse may know. You know, spouse thinks she knows everything, but that also is not true. So certain aspects, you know, your spouse knows certain aspects, your parents know certain aspects, your children know. But everything about me only I can know. So that I which knows everything is that consciousness, and it is a constant witness. It is there all the time. The consciousness itself does not act, and we'll talk about that in the next verse. But it only illumines it, like that light which illumines all that the film that is going on. So this consciousness illumines. And in Kerala, in Guruvayur, how many of you have seen there's a Krishna temple in Guruvayur where they have three different images of Krishna? Have you seen that?
Yeah,
it's, I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it. And the way they describe it, that this beautiful temple of Krishna has three images of Krishna, right? Am I right? Yes. So the one is childhood. There is a baby Krishna in a cradle and being, you know, you can go push it and you can, you know, women come and, you know, change its clothes and feed it. And it's a statue of Krishna. It's an image. And the older children come and they're very possessive. They hold it because, oh, this little baby needs help. And so the children love to play or to go to that particular Krishna. So early in the morning, the prayers are offered to this Krishna, the baby Krishna. You know, though even the priests offer all the swaha and all the flowers and the, you know, sweets and everything to that. Then in the noontime, when the prayers are offered, then we show Krishna as a young man, very handsome, you know, with his peacock feather in a crown and wearing a yellow robe and tall and handsome, very nice looking. And the young men and women can relate to this. Yeah, that is the Krishna we want, you know. And so in the noontime, they offer prayers to this Krishna that is young, that is, you know, the middle of the day. And then in the evening, the Sandhya Vandana, by then they show Krishna walking with a stick. And he can barely walk and he's ready to drop his body. Am I right? Is that how they show it?
Yes.
Right.
So, went in the morning,
oh, you went in the morning. But in the evening, the Krishna is shown with a stick, barely walking, old. He's ready to drop his body. And the evening prayers are offered to this Krishna. So the morning to the young, noon to the, I mean, morning to the child, noon to the young, and the evening to the old Krishna. So the idea of this three prayers, that there is one Krishna, one consciousness, one Lord who takes different forms. The Lord was the same in the baby. The Lord is the same in the young man. And the Lord, it says Krishna lived for, I think, 130 or 140 years. And even when the Lord was ready to drop his body, the consciousness was the same. So they are praying to the consciousness in three different forms at three different times. So that is the message of this, that the consciousness is the same. And then some people say, this Buddhist say, there is a, not all the Buddhists, but there is a branch of Buddhism which says Kshanik Vijnanavada. There's a lot of technical words. So he says, it's not a common, not a constant consciousness. Consciousness is born and dies, born and dies, born and dies, born. Kshanik, every moment. How can that happen? You think every moment we are born and dying, then how, if I'm dead now, how do I remember what was last week or last month or last year? So that theory is no good. And it is said it is aja, it is unborn. Unborn we have already talked about. Nitya means eternal, Shashvata means unchanged, and Purana means very ancient, very ancient. That's why our Puranas, you know, where we have this Bhagavad Puran and Shiv Puran and Devi Puran, they give us the message of that eternal consciousness, which is the most eternal. That's why the Puranas are said to be eternal, very ancient. Now, Aja also means goat. And so there is another theory in some branch of Hinduism where they believe that we came out of a goat. That's why they say Aja. Aja means goat in Sanskrit. Aja means unborn. Aja also means goat. So the same word in Sanskrit can have multiple meanings depending on the context. So they say there was this giant goat who had three patches on her. Red, white and black. So from the goat we all came. We all evolved from the goat. That's why it is Aja. And why red, black and white? Because the white represents sattva, represents purity, red represents raja or activity, and black represents tamas. So three colors, three gunas. So So from the goat we emerged. Or some people say Prakriti has three gunas. But that is a theory. Nobody was going to believe that, you know, that we came from goat. You know, that. So this reminds me of a little story. So this boy goes and asks his grandmother. He says, "Grandmother, where did we come from?" So she says, "You know, God created us. God made us in his own image. So God created us." So he said, okay, he believes that. The next day he asked the grandfather, "Where did God come from? I mean, where did we come from?" Grandfather said, "We came from monkeys." You know, he believed in the Darwin's theory of evolution. So from monkeys, we evolved and became humans. So then he goes to the grandma. He says, "Grandma, you said God created us. And grandfather said we came from monkeys." She says, "Yeah, his side of family came." He's talking about his side. So my side was created by God. So this is the message so far. And obviously, like all of you, you know, look quite confused. I'm also confused. And Arjuna must have looked very confused. He says, "This Aja, Nitya, unborn, I don't understand that. It's too hard. You know, talk about my problem. I asked you my problem. That what's going to happen? What is my duty? What should I do?" So Bhagavan says, "Be patient. It will happen gradually." Like right now, most of us, at least I feel, that this knowledge is too high for us to grasp. You know, that I am this eternal consciousness. My problem is my husband doesn't talk to me nicely. Can you tell me how to deal with that? You know, or my teenage son doesn't talk to me or whatever. So Bhagavan says, we will do that. It is gradual. So that's why there are 18 chapters. See, we are only in the beginning of the second chapter. The second chapter has 74 verses. And then there are 16 more chapters where this knowledge will be further explained. So I'll try my best as it goes along to simplify as much as I can, because these technical concepts, it's good to know about them. And then, as I said, slowly this will become, and this idea will be repeated in the next few verses. Again, Bhagavan will repeat the same idea. So just to hammer it, not that he thinks that we don't know, but what happens is this knowledge here seems very clear. Soon as we walk out, it is gone. Soon as I walk out and somebody honks at me, or somebody shows me, you know, or yells at me in the car because he wants to overtake, immediately this knowledge goes away. I am Brahman, nothing. I become so angry, and then I say I should be calm and I am not this. No, it doesn't last. Or the moment I go home and the teenager has left his room dirty, all this is knowledge immediately goes away. So that's why repeated listening, and that's what I personally also, we have been going to this mission since 1990. So 27 years we have heard. So, you know, by repeated listening, some of these ideas become clearer. So that's why repeated listening is good.